For those of you who are at organizations and you're trying to figure out your AI security, AI acceptable use policies, and all those sorts of things, what does this mean for you? Well, it means there's yet another consideration from a potential security concern, right? It doesn't mean MCPs are inherently malicious or inherently insecure, but they're also ripe for exploitation.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, weekly Intel chat. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. Joining me today to break down the cybersecurity news being shared by the awesome InfoSec community is the one and only Matt Bromley. And don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations. Think of it as a backend for your MSSP, where everything is built API first. Scale with ease and confidence as your business grows. You can start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it. Hey, good morning, sir. How are you doing, Matt Bromley?
Hey, what's going on? Good afternoon, Chris. Actually, it's almost evening time for me right now. Morning for you, evening for me. How are you doing today, sir? We're on the same day, at least. That's for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like you might be in a different time zone. What's going on with you?
I am. I'm in wonderful London this week, actually, for a SANS class in London. Having fun. Awesome students out here, in case any of them are listeners or they're listening to this. Great set of students out here and having a good time, as always, out here in the UK, where I am aligned with my favorite time zone.
And in what makes it your favorite time zone?
It's UTC. It's like the only time zone.
No conversion.
No conversion. Everything just works. I take it back, actually. I'm actually an hour ahead of UTC, but I'm closer than I would be back at home, so I get more excited. You know?
Right.
That's the old forensicator in me.
Awesome. I got nothing that stacks up against London other than it's sunny outside and life's feeling pretty good these days. So.
Nice. I like it.
All right. Let's get into it. It looks like we get to take a break from all the Iranian cyber activity and are looking at some of the other major nation states today. Yeah, we got some different stuff bubbling up. APT-41, a China-linked threat group, also known as Winty, Barium, Wicked Panda, Silver Dragon, and Brass Typhoon, is deploying a previously undetected backdoor targeting Linux-based cloud workloads. The malware is designed to steal credentials from major cloud providers, including Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud Platform, Microsoft Azure, and Alibaba Cloud. The backdoor is stripped, statically linked, x86-64 ELF executable designed to run natively in Linux cloud environments. At the time, researchers analyzed the sample. It had zero detections on VirusTotal, highlighting the stealth of the tool and the maturity of APT-41's cloud-focused development efforts. The malware uses an unusual command and control mechanism. Instead of typical web channels, it communicates over SMTP on port 25, blending malicious traffic with legitimate email-related activity. This design helps avoid detection by common internet scanning platforms such as Shodan and Census. Researchers say this capability reflects years of development by APT-41, which has gradually evolved from using basic reverse shells to building specialized tools designed specifically to harvest cloud credentials while evading monitoring systems. Once deployed on a compromised Linux instance, the backdoor begins collecting cloud identity data. It quickly queries the AWS instance metadata service at the well-known address 169.254.169.254 to obtain temporary credentials linked to the host's IAM role. If those permissions are overly broad, attackers can gain broader access across cloud resources. The malware also queries similar metadata services used by Azure, Google Cloud, and Alibaba Cloud, allowing it to gather credentials across multiple cloud environments. The campaign also relies on typo squatting to hide its infrastructure. Researchers identified three domains registered within a 24-hour period in January 2026 through name silo with who is privacy enabled. These domains mimic legitimate Alibaba cloud services and reference the Chinese cybersecurity brand Xianxin. I'm not so good at those. Do you got a pronunciation for that one for me?
Let me, I've actually got to find out. Sorry, I was reading through the article and the post. Let me see if I can find it.
Okay,
give me the words.
We'll come back. We'll come back there. Q-I-A-N-X-I-N.
Q-I-A-X-N-I-N.
Xianxin?
Xianxin?
Yeah. Okay, we'll run with that. Yeah. Apologies to any Chinese listeners. Helping malicious traffic blend to normal cloud communications. The command and control servers are also designed to ignore casual probing and respond only to traffic that matches the malware's expected communication pattern, making detection more difficult. Defenders are advised to monitor for indicators associated with the activity. Network monitoring should flag outbound SMTP traffic from systems that normally do not send email, as well as unusual UDP broadcasts to port 6006. Host-level monitoring can identify unexpected reads of cloud credential files or unusual processes calling metadata APIs. Organizations can also strengthen detection by enabling cloud logging services such as AWS CloudTrail or Google Cloud Audit Logs and enforcing security controls like AWS IAMDS V2 to limit credential theft through metadata access. So yeah, I mean, this looks super sophisticated and probably something that most people would be caught with their pants down if they were approached by this.
I would have to agree with you on the first off, we're not talking about Iran. Sorry, I'm still stuck in that. But no, more interesting is look at APT 41 coming back up a little bit from the, I'm not going to say from the dead there, Chris. That's not the fair way to frame it. But coming back, hat tip to the folks over at Break Glass Intelligence who gave us this very, very interesting report. This WinNTI ELF cloud credential harvester and the time that it's been tracking and whatnot. I find this to be a super fascinating threat. Not only is it very well tuned into how cloud infrastructure operates, but it's also utilizing a very used port. SMTP over port 25 is a very well-known port, sending plain text emails over and everything like that. If you know you're not monitoring port 25, which a lot of folks don't, you might not recognize that there's plain text credentials and C2 traffic and whatnot going out over that particular port. We've talked before many times, Chris, about why adversaries choose the network capabilities that they do to communicate outbound. Something else, and I feel like you and I have talked about this before, actually. But seeing the adversaries querying the 169.254 address, I know we've talked about a piece of malware that did this before. That's actually a hard-coded IP address that you can use to pull back role credentials and things like that. And again, I find that the adversary is very cloud aware, very cloud knowledgeable, and is taking a position to have a very cloud-first approach here. Cloud-specific malware runs inside of Linux instances, Chris, which you and I both know is one of the more common side of cloud deployments, right? Communicating over port 25. There's not much deep inspection that takes place there, as this article is called out. And whether or not 25 is open is another sure bet that adversaries can make as well. This is the really interesting part I thought about here. You know, when you have SMTP communications, you're likely going to have a lot of other SMTP-focused applications reach out to you and whatnot. And connections from scanners, crawlers, and probes that don't present the correct token receive a standard SMTP banner. So they even went through the masking capabilities of, we're going to hide this C2 so that it doesn't even trip and give the evidence of who we are and what we do. And, you know, I don't want to say hat tip to the adversaries, but definitely a lot of forethought went into the C2 side of things here. Utilizing UDP for broadcast packets. There's a lot of really good network knowledge that gets baked inside of this one here, Chris. Great IOCs and everything provided in the article. The APT41 attribution is interesting. It does speak of years of knowledge of when these guys have been operational. If you're a defender listening to this, you got a ton of IOCs to tug on. If you are super nervous about a particular attack like this or this piece of malware showing up, you've got ports to look at, maybe even some network visibility on the roadmap for, hey, how do we get better visibility into this thing?
Yeah, I wonder if our friends at Sublime have something to pick that up. It seems like it would be right in their ball court.
I don't know court. If it sends actual emails out.
Right.
So it might not enter that protocol, but I would agree with you that anyone who's dealing with email might have a way to handle kind of the back and forth transaction nature of like a SMTP connection.
Right. Okay, next up, Fancy Bear, also known as APT-28 or Forest Blizzard, is a Russian cyber espionage group believed to operate on behalf of the country's military intelligence service, the GRU. Active since the mid-2000s, the group has targeted governments, defense organizations, and strategic sectors worldwide. It has been linked to attacks on Ukrainian critical infrastructure and interference in the 2016 U.S. elections. Recent research from Trend Micro indicates the group remains active and continues to conduct large-scale espionage campaigns aligned with Russian geopolitical interests. One campaign identified by researchers uses a malware toolkit called Prismex, targeting the defense supply chain linked to Ukraine and allied countries such as the Czech Republic, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Turkey. The operation exploits several Windows vulnerabilities, including the confirmed zero-day CVE-2026-21513 and the Microsoft Office vulnerability CVE-2026-21509. Prismex combines steganography, comm hijacking, and abuse of legitimate cloud services for command and control communications. The toolkit supports both espionage activities and destructive operations, including commands capable of wiping systems. Researchers also documented NTLM V2 hash relay attacks conducted between April 2022 and November 2023. In these operations, attackers intercepted authentication traffic to capture login credentials without needing the victim's passwords. One technique exploited the Outlook vulnerability, old CVE-2023-23397, using malicious calendar invitations. When the victim system connected to an attacker-controlled SMB server, the process exposed the user's net-NTLM-V2 hash, which could then be reused to authenticate to other systems supporting NTLM authentication. The group also carried out credential-focused phishing campaigns and brute force login attempts against government organizations. To obscure its activity, Fancy Bear used VPNs, Tor, data center IP addresses, and compromised routers. The FBI also warned that the group exploited vulnerable routers, including TP-Link devices, affected by an older CVE, modifying DNS settings to enable adversary in the middle attacks against encrypted traffic. Security experts emphasize that organizations do not need to match the sophistication of a long-running APT group to improve defenses. Many intrusions still rely on common weaknesses such as phishing, weak credentials, and unpatched systems. Recommended defense included multi-factor authentication, timely patching, router firmware updates, user awareness training, and strong identity controls such as least privilege access and zero trust architectures. Yeah, that's a thing that I thought really stood out in this article. There is two really new CVEs mentioned, but like two of them are quite old. So if you were patching and keeping up to date with, Patch Tuesday, you would probably be protected in those two cases.
Yeah, that is going to be one of my critical pieces of advice, everyone here. Patch. Don't give these groups the leverage that they can use a multi-year old CVE in order to impact you. Come on now, folks. But hey, that's not what we're here for, Chris. We don't point fingers. We just talk about what a patching schedule should look like. I just find it interesting. We've got two articles here that are referencing kind of tried and true historical campaigns, APT 41 and APT 28 or Fancy Bears. These ones are known as well. I don't think it's any secret to anyone that this group operates at the behest or the direction of Russian military intelligence. They've been around since the mid 2000s. And I'm just kind of quoting what was in the Dark Reading article here, which was actually also pulled from a Trend Micro post, which find it interesting that, you know, not only is this group up and active again, they're kind of being tracked. We've got this brand new piece of malware, a collection of interconnected malware components, steganography, comm hijacking, cloud service abuse. Just seems to me like, you know, we've got a couple of groups, Chris, who are kind of leveling up their skills as they go after more and more hybrid environments and things like that. Bringing in cloud-focused malware. They've been, you know, about 6 to 8 months in activity now, escalated in 2026, and then continued kind of like the attacks, as the article calls out, that have been going on against Ukraine since 2014. I think this is kind of a continued thing that we will like see more and more of, Chris, is kind of maybe this resurgence of threat actors, maybe as cyber takes a different stage with the conflict going on over in the Middle East right now, the most recent one, if you will. It might be an indication of other threat actors either ramping up a little bit, or maybe it shines the light. Maybe we see some more activity come out there. My best of advice for any defender who's listening to this, look, there's lots of IOCs and how the malware works. Prismex does have a few CVE or 2026 CVEs baked into it as well, which means the adversaries are up and actively maintaining it. One of them as old as 2 months ago, as of the recording of this episode here. You've got a threat actor. They're up to date. They're keeping their malware up to date. They're keeping their exploits fresh, if you will. Great analysis in here. Hat tip to the Trend Micro folks for the really, really detailed analysis and walkthrough, as well as getting into the different documents that are used. And this is where I find it really interesting, Chris. They're seeing decoy documents of Ukrainian military drone inventory and request forms and stuff. And it's like, what a very niche targeted group of people, which I think is the goal,
yeah.
right? But a very unique targeted group of people who would probably be receiving and then interested in opening these types of documents and whatnot. And I think there's just a fantastic breakdown of some of the malware capabilities and how it hides data from a steganography perspective. This was actually one of my favorite parts to read about this article. For anyone who's curious and is into steganography and things like that, please go check this article out. It's a really fascinating walkthrough of just how it works. And I don't like to give threat actors compliments, but whenever you see something technical and stuff like this, steganography is not new by any means. But I do find it an interesting technique to still be using in 2026. And that's my other little maybe contribution to this one here, Chris, is that steganography, 2026, still making an appearance, still showing up as a valuable technique.
I was kind of having the same thoughts about NTLM.
Yeah, that as well. And yeah, NTLM being used. I mean, it's just like, wow, what age of the systems are you getting into here?
Yeah, there's got to be some old boxes kicking around if they're still using that. So
most likely, yeah. And that's the other thing. We talked about this last week, actually, maybe the week before, but understanding your targets, knowing who they are and what types of systems they're using. And this isn't always kind of just like guessing and, you know, shots in the dark and stuff like that. This might be a situation where the threat actor has very good intel leading to knowing what the target or victim organization is using. And they're using that to their advantage or you know, we're seeing them bring that to light.
All right. Next up, one for this age, Anthropic's Model Control Protocol, or MCP, widely used in agentic AI system to connect AI agents with data sources, contains a design flaw that would enable large-scale supply chain attacks. MCP was introduced in 2024 as a standard connector allowing developers to integrate AI agents with internal tools and data. Many organizations deploy it locally as an STDIO MCP server to simplify development instead of building their own connectors. However, researchers at OX Security say a flaw in Anthropic's implementation affects many MCP servers derived from the original code. The issue stems from how MCP handles command execution through its, and I said STDIO, but standard input-output interface.
I was going to correct you.
It's hard. You're just reading the stuff, right? The interface was designed to launch a local server process, but researchers found that the command is executed even if the process fails to start. As a result, attackers could supply a malicious command that still runs despite triggering an error. According to OX Security, the system performs no sanitization checks and generates no warnings in the development toolchain, allowing malicious commands to execute silently on the host system. Researchers demonstrated that this behavior could lead to full system compromise. If a malicious command is executed through MCP, attackers could install malware, access sensitive corporate data, steal API keys, or extract internal chat histories. Because MCP is commonly used in enterprise environments running local AI agents, a successful exploit could expose a wide range of internal resources and systems. The researchers warned that this creates the potential for large-scale supply chain attacks affecting thousands of deployments. OX Security disclosed the issue to Anthropic and other MCP providers through coordinated disclosure. While more than 30 related vulnerabilities were acknowledged and several high-severity issues were patched, the underlying architectural flaw remains. Anthropic's main response was to update its security guidance, advising developers to use MCP adapters cautiously rather than modifying the core protocol behavior. This effectively shifts responsibility for secure development to downstream developers, which we all know turns out well most of the time, right? Yes. The researchers argue that relying on developers to manage the risk is insufficient because the flaw exists at the protocol level. They recommend changes such as deprecating unsanitized standard input-output connections, adding command sandboxing within the protocol, introducing an explicit dangerous mode opt-in for risky functionality, and establishing standard security verification for MCP integrations. Until such changes are implemented, organizations using MCP in agentic AI environments are advised to treat the technology with caution due to the potential for unauthorized command execution and system compromise. Well, this article makes me feel better that we've moved off of the MCP architecture.
You have no more MCPs for you.
We actually might still have the MCP exposed, but internally we're using, we went through a skills moment and now we're using the CLI directly with some injected information. So we continue to evolve with the technology, as it were.
That's the beautiful part, is it continues to change all the time. And we are constantly creating new ways of doing things. It's funny to actually hear about this, Chris. I'm seeing a lot of chatter lately these days about Anthropic doing all sorts of things. And I'm not talking about Mythos, Mythos, however you want to, however you want to pronounce it.
You mean the marketing tool?
Yeah, the marketing tool. No, just more about people experiencing issues, finding a lot of security vulnerabilities. I feel like a lot of folks are entering a different age of maturity with some of these tools. And I know that's wild to think because you're like, what? These tools are so new and so immature. But I feel
I'll just cut into the problem we had with the MCP server was, we have so many API endpoints. So by the time all those definitions were loaded into the context window, it was like 70,000 tokens.
Wow.
And for those that don't know, once you use up about 30% of the context window, the intelligence falls off a cliff.
So significantly, yeah.
Most models have between 100 and 200,000 tokens available in the context window, a couple million model ones, but it's usually 100 to 200,000. And so just by loading our MCP tool definitions, we started with a dumber AI. And so that's when we moved over to skills, which was like injecting the tools as needed. So you were getting a much smaller window. And then now we're kind of onto the next thing that's even better.
Ooh, are we going to see that secret at some point? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. We just, so there's I think it's like an internal debate at Anthropic where they've been talking about this. What's the better way, skills or directly calling the CLI, right? Because there's no standardization, but it's pretty well-known system with help files and stuff. And so we're using the CLI directly now, which has been working really well for us. And
That's actually the approach that I usually take as well, is if I'm working with something like a Claude Code or whatever, I would prefer to run the tools native to the shell. Number one, I can look at the commands, right, versus approving an MCP call. Number two, I have more of an idea of how they work, and I can save those commands for the future as well. Very similar to the way that you save a good session to like an instructions.md or a Claude.md. You can also say, hey, save all the commands that we just ran into a separate file so I can repeat it. You can kind of write the scripts right then and there, if you will. One of the other things that I found too, Chris, is a lot of the Claude Code kind of design and construction I do often gets delegated to various agents who prefer to use Python agents. They prefer to write Python scripts to do what it is they need to do. So I think it's some of the most powerful positioning is, like you said, setting yourself up. Now, Chris and I fall into a very, very frequent borderline power user category of this. For those of you who are at organizations and you're trying to figure out your AI security, AI acceptable use policies, and all those sorts of things, what does this mean for you? Well, it means there's yet another consideration from a potential security concern, right? It doesn't mean MCPs are inherently malicious or inherently insecure. It means there are ways for them to be abused that threat actors have figured out, that researchers have figured out. And it's just yet, hey, in a completely closed, locked down, on-prem environment, will I be okay? Well, in most organizations, likely yes. And obviously, MCPs require some sort of connectivity and stuff. We're not talking about walled off, firewalled off, but more about, hey, if I put the right security controls in place. But they're also ripe for exploitation. As it's kind of called out in here, for example, you are dealing with an open source project that loads additional libraries on your system. A lot of MCPs exist as Node.js applications or Python applications that actually get invoked and started up every time you use it. And that creates yet another software footprint, another potential attack vector. And that's what they're calling out here, which I think is a good thing to call out. I just want to be clear for some folks, you know, if you spend all this time integrating MCPs and getting stuff into place and whatnot, oh, I got to throw my entire infrastructure away. Nope, you just got to be a little more careful. And like any good software-based tool, make sure you are very careful about what you download, what you install, what you set up. Double check your code. I believe, Chris, you guys have actually come up with an intermediary that can be used as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. We ended up making sort of like a detection system for agentic systems. So the VibRails intercepts the tool calls in between the agent talking to the system, runs them through our detection response engine, and then allows or disallows them. So you can put detections around risky actions that the agent might be taking. Yeah, there you go. So it's kind of, you know, not a solution, but definitely a way to add a layer of safety to risky agentic behavior.
Absolutely. Chris will put the link into the show notes for everyone as well.
Yes, I will. Thanks, Matt. I was The next one, I can't decide if this is related or not, but I wanted to put it in here because I know a lot of people use Nginx, and there's a critical vulnerability in Nginx UI, a web-based management interface for Nginx servers, which is being actively exploited and could allow attackers to take full control of affected systems. The flaw tracked as CVE-2026-33032 with a CVSS score of 9.8 is an authentication bypass vulnerability that lets attackers access management functions without valid credentials. Researchers have dubbed the issue MCPwn because it involves insecure integration with the Model Context Protocol. The vulnerability originates from how Nginx UI implements MCP endpoints. The application exposes two endpoints, /MCP and /MCP message, but only the first enforces both authentication and IP allow listing. The MCP message endpoint only checks IP allow listing, and the default configuration treats an empty allow list as allow all. As a result, attackers can directly interact with MCP tools without authentication, effectively bypassing security controls designed to protect the server. Researchers demonstrated the exploitation can occur in seconds using two HTTP requests. First, an attacker sends a request to MCP to create a session and obtain a session ID. Then a second request to MCP message uses that session ID to invoke MCP tools without authentication. Through these actions, attackers can modify or delete Nginx configuration files, restart services, or trigger configuration reloads, ultimately gaining full control over the Nginx service. With control over the Nginx configuration, attackers could intercept traffic passing through the server and potentially capturing administration credentials. The vulnerability could also allow malicious configuration changes that redirect traffic or enable persistent access. Data from Shodan shows roughly 2,689 exposed Nginx UI instances online, with many located in China, the United States, Indonesia, Germany, and Hong Kong, indicating a significant potential attack surface. The issue was patched in Nginx UI version 2.3.4, released on March 15, 2026. Security researchers recommend upgrading immediately or disabling MCP functionality as a temporary mitigation. As an additional safeguard, administrators can enforce authentication on MCP message endpoints or change the default IP allow list behavior from allow all to deny all to prevent unauthorized access. So yeah, this is one of those cases where you should get your patch on.
Yes, get your patch on. Patch, 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 as we always say. Look, Chris, you were right to call this out. I think it's definitely related. First off, some pretty novel techniques in here, number one. Number two, definitely related to some MCP vulnerabilities. I would argue this is a little bit different from the article we saw earlier, and I kept this post open. The article that we talked about right before this one dealt a little more about the by design failure of what MCPs can do, whereas this one is an actual MCP vulnerability. This is one that, if I kind of zoom into this a little bit, whilst the MCP requires both IP allow listing and authentication, the MCP message only applies IP allow lists, where the middleware treats it as allow all. That gives an adversary an opportunity, of course, as the article continues, to invoke all MCP tools without authentication, which is not the good thing to have. Too much permissions is not a good thing, and they actually do a good job of documenting this. It's a little bit blurry, but they go through and document this correctly here. By the way, folks, if you ever use a tool called Excalidraw and you need help exporting so it's not blurry, give me a holler. Happy to help you with that. But
I was going to say, I thought I recognized those diagrams.
100% Excalidraw, beyond a doubt. But blurry on the output, or my eyes are getting bad. I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, you are creeping up there, sir.
The authentication gap. I love this. The cross-network attack flow. They do a really cool job of demonstrating how this can be abused and how it can use how it can be used against folks who have the MCP. So found this one pretty interesting to read through. I would highly recommend, if you are someone who utilizes this, update your libraries. There's a really good call out kind of in the actual GitHub for this. And I don't think it's the actual GitHub. Maybe it is, but it talks about the Nginx UI and how the MCP exposes these vulnerable endpoints, how they can be abused, as well as things to look out for. So would highly recommend, if this is in your neck of the woods from a software perspective, patch, 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 get them updated. We've also got some mentions of some other security flaws here, which are also MCP driven. One of them is the Atlassian MCP server, and then another one is MCPwn Fluence. Not sure why we need all of these variations. Folks, come up with a different name, all right? We don't need all this.
I think what it is security researchers secretly want to be in marketing. This is my theory, yeah.
They do. They are all envious of CrowdStrike, maybe. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, if you are in one of these instances, Patch, of course, we get the obligatory, well, given the number of open instances that we found by doing a scan or looking at Shodan or something like that, you might want to make sure that this gets patched because there's a wide scope out there. Don't fall into the list of people who didn't patch and then subsequently get compromised. Don't want to see you there. Don't want to see you there.
Awesome. Looks like we made it to the end of yet another episode.
And we did.
I don't even know what number we're at. We got to be like 325 by now or something.
Something up there, yeah. I'm guessing. Something. I'm not sure. I'm going to take a look in just a moment here. Separate off window, browser window. Let's see.
Very cool.
312?
Oh, maybe. There we go.
312.
Maybe not moving as fast as we thought. Yeah.
Takes time when you're making amazing artistic work here, Chris.
I was going to say, can you go eat a meat pie and drink a Guinness for me tonight?
I am close to both of those in the right part of the world. I'll see if I can find them. If not, some authentic fish and chips will be in.
Ooh, that passes the smell test
for sure. Too, so right? Yeah. Does that pass the muster?
yeah, it does. All right, sir. Have fun. It sounds like a cool trip you're on, and. Yeah, I'll be content with my sunny garden.
Appreciate it, Chris. Always good to chat with you. Take care.
All right, take it.
See ya.
And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.